Hey guys, welcome to the Pace and Racing Podcast, the Canadian triathlon podcast made of mind for the age group triathletes. So today we have Australian pro triathlete and fan favorite Cameron Werf on for episode number 8 of the Road to Roth training series. So for the first time listeners, a little bit of a backstory here with the Road to Roth series. Now at the beginning of August, I announced I'll be doing my first full distance triathlon at Challenge Roth in 2020. And since then, I found that a lot of listeners were actually on a similar path, whether that was for Roth or another race, but they too were on their crazy journey to their first full distance triathlon and looking forward to hearing content specific to the full distance. Now, of course, never having actually done the distance before, I figured that everyone could benefit the most in a series where we interview top pro triathletes and coaches that will be able to provide us a ton of training tips specific to that full distance, as well as give us that motivation and insight we need in order to maximize our performances come race day. So this man needs no introduction here. He's a former professional rower, former pro cyclist, and now a top contending pro triathlete with a third place in Roth and a fifth place in Kona alongside some excellent performances, including a win and run course record at Ironman Italy in 2019. And now Cam also recently competed in his first ITU triathlon. So we ask him about his thoughts of that style of racing in today's podcast episode. So Cam is also known as a hilarious public triathlon figure on social media, and he never shies away from razzing a few fellow pro triathletes on Instagram when an opportunity arises. He's a great role model in triathlon, and he improves his run times. He's becoming more and more of a threat in the race course. So Cam joined us in today's episode to recap a bit of his season, including his improvements in running, his crazy training volume, and highlights his experience in podium finish at the iconic Challenge Roth. So Cam leaves us with some excellent tips relevant to Challenge Roth course. He also leaves us with some inspiration and a few great laughs. Now we also talk about what's in store for his winter season training, as well as his schedule looking forward to 2020 and the possibility of competing in the Olympics for Tokyo 2020. So I'm really excited for this one, guys, and I keep going all day, but let's hear from Cam himself. Now let's cue the music. Today's show is brought to you by two sponsors. The first one is Brown Sports Bike Shop, located in Toronto, Ontario. So I've always wanted to partner up alongside a local bike shop, but I was reluctant to commit because I never found a bike shop that encompassed everything I wanted in a shop until I met JP from Brown Sports. When you want to help represent a bike shop, you want to know you can be absolutely sure you can refer your friends and family and listeners to them and know they're being taken care of in the best hands and getting the best prices. The team at Brown Sports are super knowledgeable when it comes to proper bike selection and bike fitting. In fact, JP is a Retool and IBFI Level 2 certified fitter and will go above and beyond helping you select the right bike for you and go to great lengths in making sure you leave the best bike fit possible. And they have a huge selection of bikes, including an incredible lineup from Quintana Roo Bikes. And they're also the only company in Canada to offer up the 51 Speed Shop products. So it's really an all-in-one shop. So it's not just a bike shop though. They also have a ton of great nutritional products, swim gear, and running gear. So if you're needing to add something to your triathlon repertoire, then there's a good chance they have it. And I'm currently working with JP now to get my bike fit dialed in, as last season I realized I was losing some valuable wattage and coming off the bike way more fatigued than I had to be because my positioning was way off. So I'll be doing a video of the fitting process when it's all done. So if you want to see that, then be sure to sign up to the Pacing Racing YouTube channel to be first notified when that comes out. And alongside carrying some of the best triathlon and road bike selections, Brown Sports also has a demo room for all the best indoor bike trainers, including the TAC series, the Wahoo series, and even the latest 4i Flight trainer. So if you're in the market for a new bike trainer, then they are also the experts in that area, and they'll help you set up the proper trainer and get you a good price. So if you want to go check them out in person, you can find them at 2447 Bloor Street West in Toronto at the Jane and Bloor intersection, or of course, you can also check them out and see their full inventory and list of services online at brownsports.com. And lastly, you can follow them on Instagram or Facebook by searching Brown Sports. So the second sponsor of today's show is Soul Fitness Canada, who is a premier global name in the fitness industry and has become one of the fastest growing fitness brands across the US and Canada. So with a ton of research, I found a brand that I can stand behind for their value, quality, and service. And I'm excited to say that I ended up hooking up and getting the TT8 treadmill from Soul Fitness Canada. So you'll definitely be seeing lots of this treadmill in the Pace Racing videos. And I can't wait to put some miles on it inside the pain cave. Now, you may ask, how did I end up choosing Soul Fitness Canada over all other brands? And let's step back a little bit, because for those who don't know, Soul has a full line of treadmills. They have ellipticals, exercise bikes, and they've been in the industry for decades. It's a popular brand in well over 29 countries. Their customer service is excellent, and the prices to quality ratio far outdoes all the other competitors, and from what I've seen. So to briefly touch on the treadmill here that I went with, it has 15 levels of incline, 6 levels of decline with speeds upwards of 12 miles per hour. It has accurate heart rate monitoring with both, of course, the typical pulse grips, but they also have a chest strap option, which is very cool. It has Bluetooth speakers, cooling fan, and so much more. So these are all very important factors for me when I went looking for a treadmill. And another thing that may resonate with listeners is that it's not just for winter training. In fact, perfect example of this is I have a daughter that's 19 months old now who happens to love her nap time, thank God. Now, I love the idea that I'm able to go for a long run on the treadmill while she sleeps. And I think this is a great way for effective time management for that time-starved triathlete out there. So if any of you are in the market for treadmills or even bikes or rowers or ellipticals for your pain cave, then I can recommend firsthand, head to soulfitness.ca, or you can check them out on Instagram or Facebook by searching at Soul Fitness Canada. And again, Soul is actually spelled S-O-L-E. So Cam, welcome to Pace Racing Podcast, man. How you doing?
Good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks, no worries, man. Glad you're able to make it today. I know we were undecided last second if it was going to happen or not, so I'm glad it did, and happy to have you on here. And there's a ton to talk about, especially to do with Challenge Roth today, which I'm super excited about. But before we dive into all that, just for the listeners who don't know yet, can you tell them a little bit about your background and how you got into triathlon? Because, of course, as you know, you're a man of many talents, and you've had a couple of prior professional sports backgrounds, eh?
Yeah, well, I don't like to look in the past. I like to look to the future, and I think I might have just discovered my next sport. I had my first skimo experience this afternoon, where I bought a new set of skis yesterday, and the latest and greatest version of that discipline, and I was able to scale the mountain this afternoon, and then fly back down, and then go back up again and back down. And gosh, it's like enduro mountain biking. It's like the coolest sport that's ever been invented. I'll never feel lazy on the ski hill again. So, yeah, I'm always on the lookout for a new sport. That's for sure.
Awesome, eh? So now, where are you? Are you right now? Because you said obviously it's snowing there, right? So whereabouts are you?
I'm in Andorra. It's in the Pyrenees. It's a principality. We have a one border. It's sort of semi part of the EU, I guess. I guess similar to Monaco, except we have a controlled border with one with Spain and also one with France. And so obviously there's a lot of snow around. There's been a lot of snow the last couple of weeks, and the ski season in my little town doesn't officially open until next weekend. So, you know, all the runs are getting prepared. So it's sort of like the perfect time for skimo. You've just got these, you know, perfect mountains with no one on them, and typical Pyrenean weather with mountain weather with beautiful blue skies, and you know, it's just a bit chilly, so perfect place to chill out, so to speak, at the end of a long season.
Yeah, no, there you go, man. That's it. So to kind of recap that, so you've been a professional rower and then a cyclist and then, of course, triathlete. And then, you know, in the coming years, we'll see a professional skier, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess, back to your first question there, rowing. Well, you can't be professional in as much as, I was part of the national program. So it was what I did full time with studying. I also got my degree in economics and Bachelor of Economics. I majored in finance during that time, which is pretty common for rowers. They're always either working or studying at the same time. So, I competed obviously at the highest level there. I was the under 23 world champion, and then, made the Olympic team, and was fourth my last year rowing actually at the senior level. That was 2006 before I ended up cycling, which certainly wasn't a planned switch. I had an injury in my wrist, had tendonitis, and forced me onto the bike for a bit, and realized it was more enjoyable going forwards than backwards, and stuck with that. And so I guess fast forward almost sort of 10 years doing that, got a bit sick of that and thought, finally start using my education. So I moved to the US and started looking for a job in finance, which is what I'd always wanted to do, was work on Wall Street. And Yeah, it's a very corporate sport, triathlon, it turns out. And met quite a few people that were into it and suggested maybe I do that while I was on my, you know, year of sort of having a bit of a break and looking at what to do next. And yeah, did a couple as an age grouper. The Whistler Ironman actually was my first Ironman. And yeah, absolutely fell for the sport. Obviously, we've been, took probably another 12 months to decide whether to go for it properly or not, because I was a bit over, you know, a bit over sport, to be honest, at that point. And decided why not. You know, it's actually when I got a job in finance, the guy that had offered it to me actually said to me, but why the hell do you want to do this when you can do this, you know, in 10 years time? Go and use your body and enjoy that. It's a privilege. And from what he knew of me, he felt that I could have achieved a fair bit more in sport than potentially what I did in cycling or even in rowing. And I owe my friend Ethan Penner a hell of a lot for pushing me this direction, because it's been one hell of a journey, that's for sure.
Yeah, man, that's amazing to hear, right? And so it's funny you mentioned that that you were on the Olympic team for rowing. So now I'm almost seeing a funny trend here. I just noticed that you recently competed in your first ITU World Cup there in Santo Domingo. Yep. So yep. I mean, are we going to see you competing in the Olympics anytime soon, or what?
Yeah, I don't know what we need, what we call that participation. it was a great first 400 meters. I thought, wow, this is the first time that I've been going this fast in the swim for 400 meters and still had bubbles in front of me. I thought I'm all good. And we turned that first buoy, and you know, you think, oh, you've weathered the storm. I mean, an Ironman, it's the first 300-400 meters, and then if you make that cut, you're pretty good. It sort of sorted itself out by then. Yet we turned the buoy, and the group got a little bit sort of split with a couple of different trains, and I was a little bit indecisive in trying to get from one to the other and choosing which one to follow, and lost a few more spots there, and also in the process ended up with, I guess, some clear water, which was my worst enemy, and was dropped straight away, you know, and that was it. I mean, I was still relatively in touch the first half of the swim, the first lap, 20 seconds or so, but second lap, I think I lost nearly 2 minutes. I mean, they just disappeared. I was on my own on the bike. I did manage to catch a few people, which was good, but you know, against groups of 20, 30 guys, it doesn't matter, you know, how strong you are, just the sheer momentum of a peloton. I mean, I know that better than anyone, what happens when you go out the back. And then on the run, I was just going full gas to try and make sure that Matt McElroy and his band of merry men from the US didn't lap me, and I didn't get pulled off the course, because I was like, damn, I can't come all this way, and you know, I'm not going to do a Langer and be having my ass kicked and just pull out because I'm getting my butt kicked. I've got a bit more pride than that. I'm a bit more of a gentleman, have respect for my competitors. So so that was quite an eye-opener. I mean, I guess learning how crucial that swim is. I mean, people have told me that and told me I had no chance and everything else. Of course, I've heard it all, but you know, you could tell me that till you're blue in the face. I mean, I need to find out these things for myself. And I must admit, I was a bit shocked how crucial the swim was. But also it was a huge experience. You don't get that from sitting on the couch at home. So I had a quite an extensive conversation with the national selectors this morning, actually, and just about where do we go from here. And it's in their hands, because of course you're representing Australia in these World Cups and higher level competitions. So it's up to them to enter me. I certainly would like to, you know, continue with what we set out to do, which was, that was more of a go and see what happens. And a great result would be being able to finish, which I was actually able to do. I'd like to, you know, train as much as I possibly can before now and potentially South Africa, the first World Cup of next year, and see if I can stay in touch in the swim. And then we look at it from there. So, yeah, I mean, I guess going to the Olympics, the door's not completely shut, but it's certainly now make or break. You know, every race will be a cutoff. You know, if I can't get to a certain level that we set, that'll be it. If I do, it'll be, you know, on to the next and so forth until the team's chosen in June. So I'm fully committed to trying to make that team. And I'm going to do everything I can to try and be there. But obviously under no illusions of, how much of a mountain I've got to climb to be on the starting line in Tokyo. So, but it's something that really drives me. And I think my flaws in Ironman, particularly in Kona, you know, we saw this year where the swim became so crucial to the overall outcome of the race. You know, that's something I've got to work on. And, you know, worst case scenario, even attempting this, it certainly put a rocket up my backside to get my swim together and work hard on that. So I think the long game of obviously is winning Kona, and this will be something that will definitely contribute towards that in a significant way.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, man, that's just it, right? It's the ITU swim in particular. It's just so incredible to kind of watch how these athletes do it. So just training like that and competing in it, it's gonna fold over into full Ironman distance regardless. So I think that'll do really well too, right?
And I certainly, one thing else I loved was just being there and the intensity of the event around it, the athletes, you know, before the race, the days leading in, obviously the race itself. I've missed that, you know. I mean, I wouldn't say I've become soft. I do something different, you know. I mean, they're basically two different sports, Ironman and, you know, and the Olympic distance, even though you're doing, in theory, the same thing. But I miss that from the rowing days where there was that intensity before the race, you know, and you couldn't waste a second of the race. You didn't have time to get yourself out of trouble, you know, and guys racing around, you know, it was like the CrossFit games going on before the race, people jumping and push-ups, burpees and somersaults and God knows whatever else everyone was up to get ready. And I was sort of just standing there with my drink bottle in my hand thinking, what am I in for? And and that was awesome. You know, I really missed that. And I really admired that side of the sport. It was just so awesome to see, you know, that, another element to this sport. I mean, I'm so new to it. I'd never even done an Olympic race in my life, let alone a World Cup. it was quite a baptism of fire, so to speak, but also just great for me to understand a bit more of the heritage of the sport that I'm involved in. So, it was awesome.
Yeah, so that's pretty crazy, right? And so, I mean, of course, you're going to be doing some more ITU races in the future to qualify, and you have until June to do so. So I think that's pretty cool. But have you considered competing in the Super League throughout the winter to kind of help prep for ITU? Or
No, I mean, the it's a bit of a balance, obviously, because we need to be realistic in that Kona is what I'm good at and, you know, focusing on that. So it's really just at the moment a project in improving my swimming, you know, to get to the point where I can stay in the field, get on the bike with the field, see what I can do on the bike, and then see what happens on the run. And really doesn't go a hell of a lot more than that. I certainly don't want to be traversing all over the world, you know, in the first part of the year chasing it. So, you know, we've come up with a strategy where it's really only a few races that I'll do. And as I said, if I don't get past the next stage, then I won't even do the next one, and then so forth. So, I certainly won't be chasing racing opportunities to gain experience. It's, because it's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward what I got to do. I got to swim well. And then, you know, from there, my experience that I've had in cycling, I should be pretty much capable of doing, you know, trying to influence the race the best way I can. And then obviously the run, it's just what you got left. So, Super League would be, that'd be wonderful. But yeah, you start throwing too much in, by the time you get to October, you're going to be exhausted. So, can't forget what the main priority is.
For sure. Yeah. So it sounds like then you're going to be doing, it's the main goal is Ironman, it's going to be Kona, and then you're just going to throw these in around it. So that's good. I think that's a pretty realistic training plan, right? So
yeah, and I mean, it's no, you know, the other thing is there's no secret as to why Australia would potentially want me there. You know, it's more of a role to be of assistance to the other guys who are capable of actually winning the race. So, you know, which is nothing dissimilar to what Canada do with Mr. Chuk or you know, the British guys have done with Brownlee, and I'm sure a lot of other countries have done without anyone noticing. I think if you don't do that now, you are really against it. So we don't really need to look past the swim and the bike. The issue here is, though, I need to get some points. So, you know, in the first instance, to even be eligible. So that's the trickier part. And as in where you need to make some adjustments potentially to the running. So, I need to train for that. And racing every week in, week out doesn't give you the opportunity to make those step changes. And I think that was something that we did very well this year was, you know, compared to previous years, was I did, you know, very little racing. I only raced 4 or 5 times, I had obviously massive blocks of preparation, which seems to be something that I respond best to.
Nice. Yeah. So that's perfect, right? So as we talked there a little bit about the long course, it's, and your season this year, right? Like, you just set that Ironman Italy new run course record, which is, it was pretty impressive, right? Because that's something that you've been wanting to work on your run. So like, looking back, your Kona run, well, speaking of Kona anyway, your Kona run was the 319 in 2017, and then a 306 in 18, and then a 255 in 19. So those are some big improvements year over year, right?
Yeah, and we honestly feel that next year I can make another, you know, 9-10 minute gain. I think we sort of feel like I'm on the cusp of actually making a significant breakthrough in my running. I don't think I've made it yet. I've improved, but, you know, I think that the work that I've put in, and, you know, the indicators of potentially where I can get with my running, I don't think we've really seen where I can get that marathon to as yet. So, particularly in Kona. That's been exciting. And, you know, if you look at, say, the ITU stuff compared to the Ironman thing, you know, the best ITU guys, whether they come to half Ironman racing or full Ironman racing, the one thing they always do is swim in the front, and they're at the front on the bike, yet they all seem to struggle on the run. Okay, of course, you know, the half distance a bit different with Gustav Iden, of course, Blumenfeld, and Alistair, of course, even Gomez. But if you take them to Kona, you put them at Ironman level, and all of a sudden they're, you know, pretty, you know, as far as a runner goes, they're still the best swimmers. They're still up there on the bike. But as a runner goes, they're basically, you know, they certainly haven't come to Ironman and shown they can blow everyone's doors off. So it's probably a good indicator for us with regard to the Olympic preparation stuff, being that we can't get too carried away with focusing on that side of it, the running part, because it's probably not going to help me in Kona. And the training that we have been doing, which is very different to that, I don't run very fast at all in training when you compare it to those guys. You know, it's obviously more of a strength-based thing because you need to be able to run at a reasonable speed under a very high load of fatigue. To develop your body or to condition your body to be able to do that takes time. You know, there's a reason why Jan Frodeno has been doing the sport for, what, 25 years, and yet he just had his best ever performance. So, you know, people can, I know there's people that question the way we do things and what we do, but I think in 3 years we've made some pretty significant steps forward. And not only that, I think we've probably shown the sport that you can make those steps with the right approach. And if I can continue to progress, there's no reason why, or continue to, you know, do the work, there's no reason why I can't make significant improvements in the future, because, you know, racing wise, I'm a hell of a lot younger than these guys.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of looking at it too, right? Like, age wise, yeah, definitely a lot younger in a lot of the categories. And actually, it's funny, when I was looking up at the ITU Santo Domingo, looking at the age groups of a lot of those racers, like, I think 90% of them were 90s babies, right? Like,
yeah,
it was pretty amazing how young they are.
10 years younger than me. I mean, 10, 15 years younger. It was crazy. I was by far the oldest. And I think there are some older, obviously Gomez and Moller, a few of the other guys are, you know, top guys as well, are older on the circuit still. But predominantly it's a kids sport. So, which is great. You know, kids are fast. Kids kick you in the butt. So you've got to, it's a good way to keep yourself sharp.
That's it. Yeah, no, awesome. And so, I mean, talking a little bit about Kona here with your fifth place performance there in Kona, as we're just saying, you've improved a lot, but there's a lot more improvement ahead from what you can see from your training. Now, were you quite happy with the results in Kona this year?
Well, what I was happy with was the fact that we had the best guys at their best, you know, and they all had great days. And, I feel like we definitely got the top, you know, if I say top five, being myself, but even, you know, top 10, there was a couple of guys that, it's a shame about Dave McNamee, I guess, being crook. He obviously had a problem. I mean, the thing you notice when someone's sick, the first thing that you struggle with when you're sick, as everyone knows in triathlon, is swimming. So, to see Dave back where he was, you knew he had a problem. Now, some other little snoozer that tried to tell everyone he was sick, who had the best swim he's ever had in his life, that's a pretty clear indication of the rubbish he was carrying on with. So I was thinking even already in the swim, I was already thinking about the work I needed to do when we rounded that body glove boat and I knew there was that group ahead. I was thinking, gosh, I've got some work to do before next year. So, you know, I kind of felt like the race was already gone at that point. And yeah, all I could do was get the best possible result I could. And at the end of the day, to come fifth, you know, with the four guys that finished ahead of me and the guys that were all behind me, you know, it was a huge, huge step forward for me. If I'd had that sort of performance the last couple of years where I felt like, and it's pretty obvious that the best guys weren't at their best in Kona, which was a shame, then I would have been really disappointed. But this year I left the race, you know, very happy with what I was able to achieve, because I certainly gave it everything I had on the day. And, you know, those top four guys, you know, it took their best ever performances in Kona, all of them, to be ahead. And I thought it was great for the sport, a great result for the sport. And for me personally, you know, two guys ahead of me that have won the race before, one obviously multiple times and one, you know, faster than anyone else has ever done it. And then two other guys that have both finished second before. So, you know, how could I put my hand up and say I deserve to be any higher? I definitely didn't. And my result was a huge step forward for me. So that was great.
For sure. No, awesome. That's a good way of looking at it too, right? And so it's funny looking at it. One of the funniest things I saw was the Breakfast with Bob interview with Jan Frodeno mentioning that how worried he was about you, saying it'd be hard for you to stay off Instagram for 4 and 8
hours. Yeah.
So what was your reaction when you saw that? Were you laughing pretty good or what?
He's clever. I mean, he surprises me actually for a German to have a sense of humor, as clever as he does. But I guess he's married to an Australian, so he's had a fair bit of influence from outside. He grew up in South Africa, so yeah, he's a bit of a lad, which is cool actually. I'm going to probably catch up with him next week and do some skiing when the resorts open properly. He'll come up and which would be cool. But I have a huge amount of respect for that guy, and he is the reason why I really wanted to do the sport, because I went there as an age grouper in 2015. I had a broken foot, which I'd broken after Whistler. But I wanted to be there to see it and get a feel for it and see if it was something that I wanted to pursue properly. I managed to, you know, have an average swim. I got through the bike okay. I mean, obviously I hadn't exercised for a couple of months leading in with my foot. But I got onto the run and hobbled along Ali Drive and actually got out to the Queen K before he finished. So I saw him coming back to town. And I've said this story quite a few times. Obviously, I was pretty blown away and impressed by the state of that specimen and how amazing he looked. But I also felt that, you know what, I think I can come back one day and race you. Obviously, that's been quite a burning desire, quite fixated, not fixated, I don't think it's the best word, but certainly used him as the yardstick. And yeah, in 2017 was a bit of a dream come true to be there, to catch them on the bike, to obviously blow the field apart. You know, it was disappointing to see him fall apart the way he did. But by his own admission, you know, he was off his game. He was struggling. He had a sore back. And, you know, everyone knows when everyone's got something wrong with them in an Ironman, but if you're not having a good day, it really affects you. And Jan will be the first to admit that, he wasn't able to put that out of his mind, when other days he certainly has been able to put injuries out of his mind if you look at what he competed with in South Africa. So when he was really on his game. So, you know, having Jan there this year, you know, and seeing him do what he did was exactly what I always, you know, the way I pictured the sport being. And so he's certainly someone that that really drives me, and I want to get there, and I want to race him though. I want to actually be in the race with him, not just pack fill behind him like I kind of was this year.
Right. No, man, that's amazing. It's awesome to hear the relationship there. So it's pretty cool, right? And it's always funny to watch your witty Instagram comments and social media comments to all these other pro triathletes. It just kind of makes that sport a little more fun and relaxed, right? And as you just mentioned there not too long ago about ITU, right? It can be very serious at times and like a very by the book type of sport. So it's nice to kind of show some personality and bring some light out a lot of the athletes. I think you do that very well. So it's been a good feature for sure.
It's definitely a natural thing for me. You know, I mean, Geraint Thomas often would say that people have a filter where you think just before you speak, but he thinks that I didn't get given that when I was born. So I try, and he actually calls me the radio when we're training because, keep on coming out with crap, as he says. But I must admit, you know, I sort of love doing this sport and being in the position I'm in, and kind of I've started to learn to I do think before I speak now, but I certainly don't worry too much about giving people a hard time, because people realize that it's really in jest, and it is something that people do comment on how much they enjoy that and so forth, especially with someone like with Jan, having a bit of fun the way he did, and being quick-witted to come back and have a go at me in that way. You know, one thing you always learn to worry about is you say something and then you're going to get embarrassed. You know, it's like bigger you are, the harder you fall, especially when you say anything about other athletes and then they might come out and kick your ass. But probably the biggest, compliment I had after the race was Jan sending me a message and just let me know. He said, there's a lot of people that talk the talk in this sport, but it was really great to see that you could actually stand up and deliver when it mattered. And that's been something that, you know, has really been of concern to me, I guess, playing this role in the sport, that I'm going to fall flat on my face really hard. But I feel like I can, you know, behave that way or play that role and still go out and get the best out of myself on race day. You know, I don't, it doesn't affect me once that gun goes off. So, I obviously mean no harm. And sometimes if I don't like someone, I'll happily say it too. And and in that case, I do mean offense. So,
there you go.
But that's fine. You know, we don't all have to get along. So, and I think the sport's coming into an era where it's becoming really exciting. We've got some great champions there, and I guess I'm even one of them that are not going to be around forever. Not that I'm a great champion, but one of the older guys. And then you've got some younger guys, and you've got some guys that at some point, you know, are going to come to Ironman and potentially, you know, speaking to Matt McElroy about it the other day and how excited he was. He sort of said it probably wouldn't be for quite a while before he did it, you know, maybe 5 years. I guess he's thinking the next Olympics and I guess he was probably talking a bit like me with ITU, very confident of how fast he could potentially go in an Ironman. But you know what? I don't doubt that for a second. I think the sport is in an age where, you know, we've seen significant change, and it's, not wanted to pat myself on the back, but it's been since I turned up. You know, I mean, Kona, the race record has dropped by the amount that I've dropped the bike record. You know, the others have stayed the same. And so what's interesting is in the past, someone like an Andrew Starkiewicz has been known as an Uber biker. I've obviously never come in and said, I'm such a thing. I'm here to try and win the race. But people have just let him do his thing and not really cared. You know, I mean, no one, let's face it, no one really cares what he does. But you know, I've come in and done it, and at the same time improved my run, and it's meant that people like Jan even have said, wait a minute, maybe I can ride harder and still run fast. And that's awesome, you know, and that's really one of the things that I've most enjoyed about the sport in the last 3 years is seeing how many athletes have done stuff that they weren't able to do for 10 previous years. And then all of a sudden, you know, overnight when they've seen some Johnny come lately come in and sort of start to show something, they've started to maybe think more about what they're up to and gone and made those changes. So that's only going to continue, you know, like you look, I talk about ITU, the swim being so crucial. Well, this year we saw in Kona, the swim is so crucial, whereas we've never sought that in the past. I mean, yeah, you could lose it, but you could certainly afford to be in that second group or so and still be in the race. But this year, mm-hmm. you know, you had no chance, and that's awesome. You know, you shouldn't be able to have weaknesses. You should have to be good at everything. And the level of everything should be higher. That's what's great about a professional sport. So, it's really exciting to be involved in Ironman at a time where we're really going to new levels. It's great.
Yeah, man. No, 100%. I think you said that all really well. So that's incredible. And so as we switch up, we'll talk about another race that you're involved in this year, which is Challenge Roth. Mm-hmm. And you made a lot of headway there. But I mean, let's talk about that a little more, because you came third alongside Jesper and Andy. But yeah. Can you walk us through a bit about that race experience? Because this year you went into that race with, I believe, a broken nose and a broken rib, right?
Yeah, I'd had a crash a few weeks before here in Andorra, and I just ran smack bang into the back of a car. I don't know how the injuries kind of happened. I wasn't moving fast. I was rolling through town. I was too close to the car. I just got back from the US, so I was a bit jet lagged, a bit dopey. And it stopped for a pedestrian at the crossing, and I sort of just bumped into it and clumsily collapsed onto the road. And broke my nose, smashed my nose, and broke a rib in the process. And yeah, it was one of those things where I said to the doctor, they weren't major fractures. I mean, they weren't displaced. They were significant enough that you could see them on an X-ray, which always means there's a decent break there. But nothing major. And I basically said to the doctor, you know, what would training do? And he said, it'll just slow down your recovery. And to that point, I'd been preparing for Challenge Roth. I really wanted to make a huge step there. That was like a big target for this first part of the year. And I'd been running, you know, 120K running weeks. Like, I really wanted to go there and try and have a crack at Jan's record. And I just thought, well, you know, if that's the case, I'll get through what training I can, put up with it, get through the race, and then have a proper break like we planned, and then start, you know, preparing for Kona. So yeah, trained through the rib and the nose. I mean, the nose obviously wasn't such a big deal, but the rib was pretty tricky with the swimming, and I couldn't really ride my TT bike because that pressure was quite painful. But just got through the race. It was a bit hard swimming with one arm. I'm not the strongest swimmer, less it does, but that was really bad. And I got on the bike, and obviously I was already sort of on the back foot, and I certainly tried to keep myself in the race the best I could there, and got myself back to sort of, I guess, within striking distance of the guys up front, and then went after them in the run, and was certainly, you know, got myself up to second, and was running pretty well, but then sort of fell apart a bit in the middle stages. It's the thing is, when you break bones, it's one thing for it to not affect your training so much, or you can convince yourself that it doesn't. And I didn't really feel like it did I could ride the road bike and running at least, but you just don't sleep properly. Like, every time you roll over, you wake up and, you know, your nose is itchy and irritated and, right. you know, so just recovery and things like that, you just feel pretty flat and tired. And that was how I felt halfway through that run. But, I was able to sort of grind it out, and that was, you know, a huge learning curve for me, and gave me a huge amount of confidence going forward, because I had Bart Arno and Dave McNamee behind me on the run, and they were about a minute back with, you know, sort of 6-7K to go, and I was actually able to run away from them. And that gave me huge confidence that, you know, fast forward to a race like Kona, that I could be, if I could be close to those top guys in that last 10K, then I'm in with a shot. Like, my run is good enough to compete with them at the back end. Mm-hmm. And and I was still able to sneak onto the podium. So I think it worked out for the best, because then I was able to enjoy a good break, pardon the pun, and let my bones heal. I was a bit worried there for a while because I looked pretty average with a swollen face, and my nose was all. My wife was looking at me a bit strange, wondering whether it was ever going to go back to normal. But fortunately, a good rest after that fixed it all, and cut within a few weeks, I was good as gold again, and we got stuck into the preparation for Kona. But I'm really glad I did that, because you know, nothing's ever going to be perfect, and learning to deal with a little bit of adversity is. You know, I guess if you can, yeah, sure, there's going to be times if you're injured or sick or whatever that you can't do it. But, if you can deal with it, you know, try and find a way. And I hadn't had to do that for a very long time since, I guess, cycling days when you race with broken bones regularly. So, it was a good experience. I love that race. I'm pretty confident, you know. Well, I guess regardless of the Olympics, I'll be back at Challenge Roth again this year. So with where it fits in the calendar.
Yeah, awesome. Well, there you go. That saves one of my questions up there, if you're going to go back again. So awesome. I'm excited for that. Now, for age groupers out there kind of listening to this right now, well, I'm a perfect example myself. I'll be going there next year. And looking at it from a race course perspective, is there any tips or advice for age groupers out there to focus on that course in particular, or is it a pretty straightforward course, or what are your thoughts on that?
It's by far probably the best course, you know, on the circuit. it's the swim is, you know, perfect. You know, it's just straight up and down a canal. So it's easy to sight. You can't get lost. It's fresh water, which is no problem if you're in a wetsuit, but it sucked when you have a broken rib and you're in a swim skin. But but it's the most amazing swim experience. I mean, there's people just lining the banks everywhere, and there's just nothing like the experience of Challenge Roth swim to start with. The bike, it's definitely not flat. You know, it's a rolling course. It's rarely flat. Actually, really never flat. You certainly need to be used to basically any type of terrain. There's some steep, sharp climbs, not overly long, when there's some fast technical descents, high-speed descents, so that you can take advantage of if you know the course or if you're confident on your bike. The aid stations, the volunteers, they're some of the most well-trained in the world. They seem to just – I've never dropped a bottle there, I don't think, so they're just all over it. And then the run, you've got this run where you do 25K on a perfectly flat, you know, trail, which is just so easy on your body. And then, you know, the last 15K is, back sort of into town and up a bit of a slight drag and then downhill-ish back to the finish and on concrete. And I guess if anything, it's really easy to get carried away. As far as tips go, it's really easy to get carried away on the run when it feels so good on that dead flat canal, you know, on the soft surface. But the last part, you know, can really creep up on you if you're at all fatigued. It's quite a drag. It's quite rolly, that last 10 miles. And if you've got some gas in the tank, which I was fortunate enough to have, you can actually go really well. But conversely, as I saw with my rivals, if they've burned it all up out on the nice flat canal, you can really fall apart in that area. So I'd certainly recommend, no matter how great you feel when you get out there, know that it's going to get a lot harder towards the end, and just stick to your plan and make sure you save some fuel for that last 10 miles, because it can turn a great day into quite a challenging one. That's for sure. No. But until that point, no, it's a pretty straightforward course. It's a wonderful course. So,
yeah, no, for sure, man. And so I'm glad you mentioned that it is a hilly bike course, right? Because I think a lot of people say that, like we just mentioned there, it's a pretty fast course, right? Like a lot of people do very well on it, but it's still, you have to be mindful that it still is a lot of hilly. A lot of people just naturally think it's a flat and fast course. So I'm glad you touched base on that. And that's really good advice on the second back of the run. So awesome. And
yeah.
Do you
the bike? I mean, the bike can be fast, similar to Kona, because someone like me can ride that course, but, you know, I can utilize the rollers. I can make the most of them to carry speed and so forth. But, yeah, for a lot of people, it's a challenging bike course for sure. You know, there's a lot of climbing. You're up and down all the time. And, yeah, you need to be strong for that. It's certainly, yeah, it's certainly not flat and easy. So, yeah, don't go there expecting it to be a walk in the park. That's for sure.
Perfect. There you go. And now I know it might be a little bit skewed for you because you had some broken bones there, but were there any, what would be one of your most memorable moments at Challenge Roth? Like when you look back, was there either a day there, race day, or even a week leading up to it that kind of stands out the most that people should know about?
There's nothing in our sport like running into that stadium, especially for me this year, you know, trying to fight off those guys to stay on the podium. I mean, you know, it was one of the first times I'd been to a race where I was the guy, you know, at the race. Everyone was looking at me. Everyone thought I could go really fast, challenge Jan's record, yada, yada, yada. I mean, I knew underneath it all what I was dealing with. I obviously didn't say anything before the race to not give my rivals any sort of an advantage on me. But, yeah, being able to at least salvage something, you know, and keep myself on the podium and have another great run. You know, it was the second time I'd run 250 this year. And getting into that stadium in that third place and knowing that those, you know, the guy that was second in Kona last year and the guy that was third were, you know, behind me. That was it was awesome last year when I did it, but this year in that mode, like where I felt like I'd actually had a real success, that was really cool. You know, that crowd is just, they just erupt. I mean, I was just listening for the crowd, you know, I just knew I was getting close. So I didn't know where it was and just couldn't wait to run in there. And it's funny because you sort of come off the road, the main road, and go onto another gravel path for a couple hundred meters that leads you to the stadium, but you don't really know that's where you're going. And then all of a sudden you're in there because you think, wait a minute, where are we going right now? And it's amazing how they seem to just hide 20,000 people that just pop up out of nowhere and start screaming at you. So that definitely. And then Fallon and I, after the race, I was hungry and the dog, we have the dog with us pretty much all over the world at the races, and we're all a bit peckish and thought we'd all go and have a bratwurst. And I had my hoodie and had to have a hoodie on, and because otherwise everyone, you know, wanted a photo and whatever else. But it was just incredible, the atmosphere, just seeing so many people all just hanging out after the race and talking about their day and, you know, their family and friends. Again, it's just something you don't see at any other event, that culture. And I normally wouldn't go and sit in the beer garden after a race, you know, with everyone either. But at Roth, you know, you just do it. You know, you want to be a part of every single bit. And it's a wonderful event. You know, so for me, that definitely stands out from this year, was, you know, that finish, the crowd, and then, you know, just being a part of it, you know, and that in the afternoon as people are finishing the race. Was really special.
Yeah, so that's amazing to hear, right? And so that was actually another question I had in mind, was to ask you kind of if there's something to, you know, participate in during the race week or kind of leading up to it or after or anything. And so beer garden, that's perfect. I'm glad you touched base on that, because that's on my to-do list for sure. So
yeah,
I think recommend that to anyone.
I didn't actually do any of the other things. They have other stuff going on similar to Ironman, but I definitely highly recommend the beer garden and the bratwurst and the fries. That's for sure.
Perfect. Awesome, man. So now switch up a little bit here. I know looking forward, are you now, you're officially in your off season, or do you still have another race or two planned this year, or what's looking ahead?
I don't have anything planned in that. I don't even think I could race now if I wanted to. I certainly haven't done any exercise till my debut in my professional ski-mo career this afternoon. For the last sort of 7 or 8 days. And, yeah, plan to have the rest of this month doing basically that, just a bit of that. I'll obviously get back in the pool. I can't afford to have too much time away from swimming, so I'll get back in the pool this week. And that'll probably be the extent of my exercise for the next, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. And then head back to the US in early December and and have a couple of months there for, you know, to start building up for the season. And that's it for me. Yeah, it's weird. I certainly would love to race again, but it kind of would be an afterthought now, you know, and you're probably just chasing it. Racing five times in a year is quite different to what I'm used to. But it's nice. When I was speaking to the selectors this morning, I said that, you know, they said, "I hate you enjoying your break." And I said, "Well, absolutely." But to be honest, you know, like normally, you know, you'll have, like, I remember last year when I'd done however many, 8 Ironmans plus number of whatever else's I did, you know, halves and things, probably raced 10, 12 times. You know, I was exhausted. I mean, Challenge Daytona, I had a great swim, good bike, got on the run, could barely run. You know, I was just empty, completely empty. And, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks, I just, you know, ate and drank and didn't want to do, you know, anything at all. But this time around, you know, I mean, I'm not even hungry, you know, which is a good sign, in that it means that your body's very efficient still, you know, quite fit, like, because you're not training, so you don't need fuel. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sleeping well and, yeah, wanting to exercise, which is a great thing. I'm almost forcing myself to rest now. So, you know, I think next year, you know, whether I obviously I'm going to try and make the Olympic team. So that's a big challenge in itself. But most importantly, try and make another progression to Kona, which is going to take, you know, another step forward in the level of commitment and preparation that I did this year. I think potentially, you know, finishing up now and having a good rest and making sure the body's fully recovered and recharged, I think will pay big dividends come October next year, rather than, you know, prolonging the fatigue now.
For sure. No, that makes a lot of sense, right? And like looking here past off season, we've mentioned you're going to be doing a couple ITU races depending on the qualifications, and going to hopefully do Roth, right? And then Kona in October. Yep. Have you decided the schedule in and around those races, or is it still kind of see how it goes?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just tentatively, you know, for sure Roth and, well, for sure the, you know, provided that I'm selected the first World Cup, and then see from there, potentially a couple of more World Cups after that, and then Roth. And then if I've made the Olympics, obviously the Olympics, and then Kona. So, yeah, it looks like being a pretty skinny year again. If I don't, you know, the Olympic stuff, you know, ends quickly. For example, they don't even select me for South Africa, or I go to South Africa and that's it, then I'd certainly look at an Ironman before Roth. But again, we saw how, you know, beneficial that big block of training without racing to interrupt anything was this year. So if I did do that, it'd be something, you know, more convenient in that early part. So potentially I'd do the Cairn International again, which I did this year. That was a great race, great event. And then I have a real soft spot for the Ironman in Nice. Unfortunately, the last couple of years, it's been the week before Roth. And this year, it's actually 3 weeks before Roth. And, I mean, I know we've had – people have all had their opinion regarding what happened with Italy and Kona. But I still believe – people think that it's as simple as, oh, you would have done better if you didn't race Italy. I don't agree with that. Italy gave me a huge amount of confidence, particularly when my day wasn't going as I planned on the bike and I had all those – guys with me, or a lot of them whom were great runners, to back myself to be able to, okay, you know, I'm just going to do my thing, I'm going to ride my pace, I know that's going to give you guys a tow around the course. Fortunately, there was a bit of crosswind towards the end of the bike and I was able to blow that, you know, get a gap on that group and of course pass Alistair and put some time, you know, time into him and even, you know, finally start closing on Jan and the other guys up front. But it was all too little too late. But it gave me the confidence that I could try and win that race on the run, which I would never have had I not have done Italy and mm-hmm. known that I had that shape in my legs. I think if you want to look at a, you know, performance, potentially a performance decline as a result of doing Italy, I definitely feel that one area where it didn't work was you had a week leading into Italy where I didn't do a lot, you know, because of I traveled to Italy, I picked up a new bike, which was the reason for doing the race, to test out the new handlebar, etc. and obviously did the race. Flew to the US, sort of took a week to get over. You know, it's literally halfway around the world. Get to Kona, you know, tried to get settled, you know, tried to do a good week of training, like a normal week of training, but as much as you convince yourself you are, you're not really. And then you've got a week to freshen up again for Kona. So the reality was that for 4 weeks leading into Kona, I didn't train the way I had been for the previous 3 months before Italy, which I was obviously in great shape. So I'd say that I wasn't as sharp or physically good as I was in Italy in Kona, not as a result per se of the race, but the circumstances of the travel, you know, resting, all of that stuff just sort of compounded a bit too much and left us maybe a few gears short. But, you know, potentially where I lost that, I made up for in confidence and experience from the Italy experience, which I think gave me the, you know, a great result. So next year, we'd probably look at obviously doing it differently. But, you know, if I look at Roth and potentially doing Nice 3 weeks before, I really think, like we thought Italy could have been, I think that could be the perfect preparation, because it's a 5-hour drive for me here at home. I drive down, I can do Nice. I know it all back to front because I've spent so much time there training and whatever else. I can be home that night. I've got another 2.5 weeks of good training before having to head over to Roth and get on the start line. So, I guess if the Olympic thing sort of falls apart, then that would be definitely a sort of block I'd look at doing, those two together. And then, as I said, this time around, I think between Roth and Kona, that would be it. Nothing. So,
yeah. No, amazing. Well, I mean, hey, that sounds like a perfect preparation.
Unless I make the Olympics, of course.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. So the Tokyo Olympics, it's going to be at the end of July, correct?
Yeah, end of July, first week of August.
So that's enough downtime after Roth to prep for it and get at it, or?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's 2 months later. I mean, that for me is an eternity. But you got to remember, if I make the Olympic team, which is, you know, the biggest if in sport, probably at the moment, as in it's just very, very long shot. It's certainly going to be a specific role to play, which won't involve me running, and so it's not really going to improve, you know, affect that side of things. I mean, 8 weeks after Roth, I'm obviously still going to be strong on the bike, and if I've improved my swim, I'm going to be still swimming fast. I mean, I'll be preparing to swim as fast as possible in Kona anyway, so it really wouldn't be any type of different focus. It would simply be, you know, as a part of that overall build up. There's obviously a hell of a lot of steps to get through before then, but they excite the hell out of me because they're going to force me to improve the element that, you know, 12 months ago was my second weakest thing after my bike, not my third, and my run was third weakest, whereas now I think my run's probably a bit stronger than my swim, so you know, that has to improve. So awesome.
That's great, man. Well dude, I appreciate it. I think that's a perfect kind of spot to start to end things off here. But before we officially end it off, I want to do the typical Q&A fire round here, the 1 minute Q&A fire round on the podcast, and see how many questions we get out here in 1 minute. You in for that?
Yeah, go for it. Yep.
All right, perfect. Well, I'm just going to set the timer up here, and then we'll get at it. We'll see how many questions we get through. So, all right. So if you're good to go, I'll get going.
Go.
All right. So I think we all know this, but your favorite race distance?
Ironman.
Who is your biggest influence in triathlon?
Jan Frodeno.
Now, which pro triathlete do you think looks up to you the most?
Jan Frodeno.
And which athlete's probably the biggest Cam Ward fan out there?
Jan Frodeno.
There you go. Now, do you ride on Zwift, and is that something you may do in the winter season?
No, not as much as I used to. I luckily here at Andorra, the weather's beautiful all the time. So, yeah, it's, you can imagine living in the Pyrenees and being stuck in front of a computer. It doesn't really work.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, eh? What would be a top race that you've raced at that you'd recommend anyone to try once?
Challenge Roth, for sure.
Perfect. And then lastly here, this is a tricky one. You know, if you were to host your own YouTube series or podcast series with another triathlete out there, who would it be?
Lucy Charles.
Oh, there you go. I thought it was going to be something like Lionel or something.
No. Lucy. Definitely her. Yeah.
Awesome. Perfect, man. Yeah. Well, you know what? That's a wrap, dude. Obviously, I keep going all day, but I'm sure you got a busy rest of the day there planned, so I won't keep you here any longer. But as we kind of wrap it up, do you have any sponsors that you want to give a shout out to quick? Or?
No. I think everyone knows who sponsors me and supports me. I've got a great team around me, and they obviously, you know, Bradley Wiggins said to me back in 2013, at that time, I was talking to Sky about going there, changing from Cannondale. Obviously ended up staying with Cannondale, but yeah, which is, and now incidentally I'm, you know, involved with that group with Tim Kerris and being my coach, and obviously the team, you know, representatives from the team organize everything for me. So, you know, but Brad said that, you know, you don't bother giving 100% to your sport until everything in your life is organized, you know, and maybe your family, you know, your sponsors, your coach, your team, whatever, however it looks, so that you can be 100% focused on what you need to do. And I've definitely got myself to a point in life where that is the case. You know, I've got a beautiful, wonderful, supportive wife and family, and of course my team of sponsors and coaches that we work with, you know, are obviously the best in the world, with the guys at Nike, or, you know, the Ineos crew, or the swimming team we use. It just means that I don't want for anything. You know, there's actually nothing out there that I want. I honestly believe that we do, everyone that I work with does their very best to give me the best chance, and that's all it would ever ask for.
Yeah.
And then that's up to me to just, you know, it gives me huge confidence to just go out there, train my ass off, and go and race as hard as I can. And, you know, absolutely zero regrets with anything that we decide, you know, tactically or equipment or whatever else. It's we're all in it together, and I'm really fortunate in that regard, and that team hasn't changed since the start, you know, a few years ago. We're all still together, I got to thank Wigo for that little bit of advice, because obviously there's probably a lot of reasons why he's a great champion, but that was certainly a good reminder to me, that sort of advice, how important that is. So
absolutely. Yeah. Awesome, man. No, that's great to hear, man. And obviously, again, that's a wrap. And I appreciate you taking the time today. And I think that's a great place to end it off. So thanks again, and all the best, man. And we'll definitely see you down at Roth.
Sounds good. Look forward to it.
Perfect. All right. Cheers, man. Well, guys, there you have it. Cam is both hilarious and inspirational, and I could literally chat with him all day. He's a weapon out in the race course, and I can definitely see him further improving his splits as years progress. Now, if you guys want to hear more podcasts like these, then hit that subscribe button. And you can follow me on Instagram at pacing.and.racing. And you can check us out on YouTube by searching Pacing and Racing. And lastly, if you did like this episode, please just take 2 minutes to leave a kind review on the podcast channel, as this helps get heard by more listeners through the podcast platform algorithms. Anyways, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next time.